Behind every good story is an interesting person. This is Person of Interest with Q102's Jeff Thomas.
Well, she was a fixture at WCPO Channel 9 for 20 years. Most of those years spent behind the anchor desk at Good Morning Tri-State before her surprise exit from the station last summer. But just because she's not on TV right now doesn't mean she hasn't been keeping herself busy. She's here to catch us up, fill us in on what she's been up to recently, Catherine Nero. Welcome to Person of Interest.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I'm still a person of interest. Present tense.
Of course. Let's see. You did sports for a few years.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. The first 4 or 5 years you were in Cincinnati. At what point did you seg over to the newscast?
It's funny. It was 2002.
The year
right
we
as you
got
guys
here.
Were coming here. Yeah. I got married and, you know, I was having to take off entire weekends to go to weddings or whatever because all of my friends were from out of town. And I realized also that in front of me were Denny Jansen and John Popovich, two of the greatest sports people in this town ever. And I wasn't going to go anywhere. And I kind of wanted my weekends back a little bit. And they came to me with this idea of, hey, we know that you can talk a lot. What about doing the mornings? And I'd never really thought about it. But if there was a news show that was going to fit who I was and am, it's the morning. So I'm like, let's try it.
Anchoring mornings.
Yeah.
In news.
Let's try it.
Yeah. Did you have any desire to be a journalist?
Well, you know, I mean, I love writing and I love telling stories. And so whatever that may be, journalist is a tough word for me. I have a real hard time with that word just because I feel like a journalist is someone who's investigating something big, not telling you that a house caught on fire in Covington. You know, I feel like even in the 15 years I was on the morning show, I'm a journalist, I did some very important stories about childhood poverty and, you know, incredible people and all kinds of stuff. But I mean, my Facebook profile says news personality, and I think that that's for a reason.
You think that's accurate? Because traditionally television news anchors mm-hmm. cut their teeth working the police and fire beat covering City Hall, the State House, right?
Yeah. And that is at least it was that way. These days, you know, all bets are off.
Really?
You've got, you know, people with 2 years of experience hopping into an anchor chair. But I do think that being an anchor is more than just reading things other people write, which is essentially, if I used to tell people, that's what I do. I read things other people write. But really, it's about providing that context and the perspective. And that's in this world where we have news at our fingertips. Everybody can find out anything you want at any time. You don't need me to tell you that anymore. But I can help provide content, context, and perspective. And I think that that's what was the differentiator, if you will. But the reporting I did was in sports, which is a totally different kind of reporting than news reporting.
Did you always want to do sports?
Always wanted to do sports. But I've always been a newsie. Like, I remember growing up, you know, eating dinner, watching Tom Brokaw on the news. That's what we did. And I see that in one of my daughters, same thing. She loves watching the news and she, you know, she has that brain for it. But yeah, I always wanted to do sports. I think it's because I was really bad at them. This was like my way to
really
kind of save myself. And I love them. I love sports, but covering them's a different animal because it becomes a job. It's no more fun. I remember one time watching the Super Bowl on a 9-inch black and white TV at the old Channel 9 building downtown. I'm like, this is not how you expect it to be. You know, everybody's gathered around their big, giant 50-inch televisions, and I'm watching it on a 9-inch black and white. But that's the reality of it. It's one of the reasons I switched over to news.
When did you know?
Fifth grade. I keep saying that I'm, for the first time in my life, I am figuring out what I want to be when I grow up for the first time since fifth grade. And yeah, I've always wanted to do it. I started a newspaper in my elementary school. I loved it. I loved writing and I still do. That's my favorite. That's always been my favorite part of news is the writing.
And so when Channel 9 came to you, how does this work? How does this play out? Like quite often in radio, when a morning show gets canned,
mm-hmm.
they're summoned to the general manager's office at 10:01 as soon as they get off the air.
And it's like, you know what happened, Jeff.
Is that how it went?
Yeah. It was 8:00 in the morning. I go off the air at 7:00. It was a Monday morning. I had a 3-year contract. I just finished the second year of my 3-year contract and they had an out. These contracts, you know, they're really good for the companies and not so great for the employees. And they had every right to do it, but they had a 60-day window where they could fire me for any reason or no reason at all.
Without cause.
Without cause. And that's in Ohio. You can get fired for anything. So, or nothing. As the case may be. So
is that standard in the TV business? That kind of,
I gotta be honest. I mean, people get fired, you know, there's a lot of changeover, But I asked some people who had been at Channel 9 for, you know, 30, 40 years and said, have you ever heard of this? And have been told, no, this is unusual.
So how does it work? Generally speaking, in television, established anchors, which you absolutely were, you'd been there for 20 years. What types of contracts do they have? Do they have agents? Do people not
have agents? Some people do. I don't. I had a lawyer draw up my contract. In fact, this last one I did myself just because, you know, I wasn't looking to go anywhere. And I know that the standard contract is going to protect the company and there's not much you can do about it. I'd known this over 15 years of or 17 years of contracts. And so I'd never even considered like looking at this window in between the years of the contract. That wasn't even because I said no one had ever been fired mid contract. So, and I really didn't think that it was going to happen. Honestly, I remember though that morning I got the text, come on up. And I said, okay. And I'm walking up there. And I remember I was about five steps from the general manager office's door. And I thought, what if they fire me? Because my co-anchor had been fired about 6 months prior. And it's silly me. I thought, well, they can't fire me. I'm the only one left. Right. And I remember thinking, what would I do? And I thought, just don't cry. And I didn't. So I kind of felt like I won. You know what I mean? Like when I left that room, I didn't expect it. I don't know that they did, but who knows?
People weren't acting weird. Did anybody else know about it?
I don't know.
How do they deliver that news?
So. They just slid me an envelope or a folder and said, here's your contract that we'd like you to sign, your exit contract or whatever. And you know, I've gone through a lot of emotions since then. At first, it's like you're completely shocked.
Right.
I mean, I have 15 years of perfect employee evaluations, and I know that I get along with the people I work with and all of those things. So it's just kind of surprising, and especially when they, you know, the only reason they gave me was they want to go in a different direction. So
was that the first time you'd ever been fired from anything?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I've been fired so many times for so many different reasons.
I'll tell you what, though. If there's one silver lining in this is that I have heard so many of those stories, and it does actually make you feel better. And I remember talking to one of my neighbors that week, and she's like, yeah, I've been fired. Like, well, let's see, 1, 2, 3, like 5 times. And I'm like, 5 times?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, you know, the company gets bought and sold, and you get hired and fired. And so I'm like, okay, well, this isn't the end of the world.
I've been let go for budgetary reasons was the first time. It was just it was a dying on the vine station that was struggling to keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
And the poor guy was so nice about it. And it was near the end of the year. He said, look, I'm going to pay you like the next 2 months. There was no contract or anything.
Right.
And he says, this will get you through Christmas, kid. You know, but I can't. I can't afford to keep you anymore. That was the first time. The second time, I worked afternoons at a station in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they flipped format from a rhythmic top 40 to a hip hop format. And they said, look, you know, we have a lot of respect for what you've done here in the past, but we're looking for somebody who understands hip hop culture and lives the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't think you're a good fit. But I had warning. I had a heads up.
Yeah.
And they honored the remainder of the contract. So it felt amicable to me. Now that you have some distance, the media is under assault. Journalism feels like it's under assault. How much responsibility do you think the electronic news media bears for the backlash against it right now?
You know, I think it's an interesting question. And I will start by saying this. If you had asked me 3 months ago, you know, where should people get their news or blah, whatever, I would have said, obviously TV. TV's in the best position. We understand video. We understand digital. We understand what people want. We give it to them. Now, as a viewer and as being out of a traditional newsroom for that length of time, I consume news, and I say consume because it's not all watch or listen. It's reading. I'm getting it on social media. I'm getting notifications, whatever it may be. I consume it completely differently. And I believe that what the problem the electronic media has is that the people making the decisions are people who are in a newsroom making decisions like a newsroom person would make a decision, not like the average viewer at home watches or consumes that news. And I think that that's part of it. So we're like, well, here are the most important stories, and this is why they're important, because there are police lights involved or because there are sirens. And, you know, it's like wrecks and fires and, you know, all these things that are certainly important, and I'm not saying they're not. But are you going to take that story and go to work and go, hey, did you see that fire that happened over the weekend of this house and no one was hurt? No. But you may say, hey, did you see that candy corn was first manufactured in Cincinnati? Like, that might be something you talk about. And so I'm not saying that we need to dumb it down and have all fluffy news, but I think that there's a certain storytelling that's lost. I think that it's we've spent so much time shortening stories for our shortened attention span that we're losing a lot of what makes stories interesting.
Do you feel that television news, and I'm not just talking about cable, I almost want to like set cable news networks aside for a minute and focus on local television news and the three legacy networks that do these nightly newscasts. Do you get a sense that they add drama to the news to attract viewers? And that is maybe part of the backlash against the media.
Yeah, I think that generally, yes, I think you could say that. But I think that also it's tough to tell every story in a minute 10. And I think a lot of times, instead of really parceling out, here's the nuts and bolts of the story.
And the context of the story.
Yes. And you got to kind of jam it down into that 1 minute, 10 second package that you're assigned. I think sometimes it's hard to explain the story adequately. So sometimes you have to rely on drama to make it good. And I think that that, again, goes back to good storytelling. But, you know, in the best newsrooms, we're going to say, if this is a good story, convince me of it and you take as long as you want. Now, I know that that doesn't work in the real world all the time. But I remember fighting for stories. I live in Northern Kentucky, and I would just be banging the drum for Northern Kentucky. Like, don't forget this happened. This is a really big deal. And it's all about perspective, because that's my perspective. I see that. I live there. I hear it. My neighbors tell me these stories, you know, parents of my kids, friends, and all this. They're not getting the same thing, they being whomever, but they're getting a totally different story than I'm getting. And all of those perspectives are important. And too often we narrow that focus to, oh, we're only going to cover Cincinnati news. Well, there's a whole world outside of Cincinnati that's still relying on us to tell their story as well. So I think that that is partially. I think that a lot of people's, you know, kind of being disenfranchised by news in general is the fact that it doesn't tell the stories they want to hear or doesn't tell the stories from their neighborhood. But I do think that local news can do something that nothing else can. And weirdly enough, in this world of fake news and all these stories coming about and the assault from government officials and elsewhere on local media or on news media in general, I think that local news has a place now that it hasn't had in a long time. And it's because of that experience, that context, and that perspective that we can give that, you know, you're not going to see these stories on national news. You're not going to see the local football scores, you know, anywhere but local media. And we have an obligation, I think, to use that to tell the stories that haven't been told.
Are you open to doing television news again?
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to count anything out.
If another station contacted you and said, we'd like to talk about finding a place for you here, would you be open to that?
Yeah, I absolutely would. But I'll tell you, I think I would like something a little less traditional. Again, I would have been on that treadmill for 20 more years. As long as I would have left Channel 9 being fired, regardless of what year that was, because I was just going to stay there forever. But I do think that now, again, watching television in a different way, I think there's an opportunity for a non-traditional newscast, whether that's a conversation like this or, you know, just something that's a little bit different than what we're giving them now. The other thing is, I think television needs to think beyond the television set. And I think that, you know, the conversation in the newsroom for years has been, how do we get these 20-somethings to watch TV? Well, you don't. You got to go where they are. And wherever that is, and you got to give them news in that platform, whatever that is. And I think that until we realize that as an industry, we're not going to be successful long term.
You sound like a consultant.
I do, don't I? I don't know. It's just really interesting the perspective I've gotten being an outsider. You know, this is the first time in my adult life. This is the first time since I was 17 I've not worked in the media.
Yeah.
Actually, 15. My first job was when I was 15. I was an intern at a radio station in Memphis. And so I've done something with the media since then. And so it's 30 years of this. And so being outside of the newsroom, especially like, for example, when the shooting happened downtown, it's the first breaking news event of my lifetime that I wasn't involved in some way, like covering in some way. And watching it brought a whole different perspective of what we do.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you know, the other part of it is what I'm saying may not make money. And let's be fair. That's what we're all here to do, is make money in the long run. But I do think that there's a vast majority of people who, you know, when they tell you, why don't you watch TV? Oh, the news is sad, or it's depressing, or I have to explain too much to my kids.
Yeah.
They have a point. I get that. And I think that there's a way to make both sides happy. I think there's a way to inform and educate people while also giving them stories that they want, entertaining them in the process.
We're going to take a quick break right here, but coming up next, more from former 9 News anchor Catherine Nero, her pathway to the tri-state, how she got her foot in the door at the age of 15, and the job that prepared her the most for a career in broadcast news. You may actually be surprised when you hear it. It has nothing to do with broadcasting or the news business. That's coming up next as Person of Interest continues.
We'll be back with more Person of Interest in a moment.
All right, welcome back to Person of Interest. I'm Jeff Thomas. My guest today, former 9 News anchor Catherine Nero. She was abruptly let go from Channel 9 last summer. What is she doing now, and where is she headed next? But before we get to that, let's go back to how Catherine originally got into broadcasting and the job that prepared her the most for a career in broadcast news. It may surprise you to know it has nothing to do with broadcasting or news. My conversation with Catherine Nero continues now. Let's go back to, you brought up Memphis. This is where you're originally from, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And your first internship was when you were 15.
Yes.
Yeah, at a radio station.
So what happened was, this was back when they had news departments. This was at Kix 106. It was a country station in Memphis. And they advertised for a news intern. So of course I apply because that's who I am. And I got an interview, and the news director, Regina Burns, she was like, "This is really sweet, but you're 15. I really need a college kid." I'm like, okay, this is a morning show. About 4 weeks later, she called me. She goes, "Yep, I hired 3 interns and they all quit because they don't like the hours. If you'll do it, I'll let you do it." Well, I couldn't drive. So my dad had to drive me to this radio station at 4 a.m. And I loved it. I loved it. I mean, it was back then you were literally ripping copy off of the AP wire and cutting and pasting, and not on a computer, on pieces of paper. But it was my first kind of like indoctrination into how this all works.
And you did this during the summer? Like, you were still going to school?
Yeah, okay. It was during the summer. I would cut and splice tape, like all of this. We did a community fair show on the weekend, and I would edit it, and I loved it.
And you didn't have any experience prior to
that,
right?
I just wrote. I started that newspaper in my junior high school.
Newspaper,
that was about it.
In terms of like the editing, the cutting, and the pasting, you had to learn on the job. Mm-hmm. Somebody was patient and took the time to train you on
it. Thank God. Right? Yes. It was a department of one. So I was the intern to the department of one. So she taught me everything that I could possibly learn.
Was this a paid internship?
No, of
they
course
didn't have
not.
Paid internships
of course
in
not.
Those days,
no. I did that one summer because then after that I worked at Graceland, Elvis Presley's Graceland.
What did you do at Graceland?
I was a tour guide at Graceland.
Really?
Yeah. And I say this with absolute, just 100% positivity. It prepared me more for this job, whatever this job is that I have now, as anything I ever did, because you were forced to talk to people. I was kind of shy as a kid, and like very shy as a kid. And I was forced to talk to people in 100-degree heat, in as they've already paid like $50 to go take this grand tour of Graceland, and they're waiting outside in the Memphis heat in August, and I'm having to entertain them. And it just taught you a lot about how to make people smile and ad-libbing and all of that.
How to engage
stuff.
Them, how to hold yeah. their interest.
Keep and you them see when somebody's paying attention and, you know, but it was by happenstance that I got that job, but it really prepared me more than I ever thought it would.
And so eventually you went to college.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you go to school?
University of Memphis, right down the street from my parents' house.
And you studied
broadcast journalism. And while I was in school, I interned at a couple of TV stations and sports, and I worked for the sports information department at Memphis. And so I would run stats and, you know, worked all the basketball and football games. And, like I said, did internships, and that's kind of got my foot in the door and started work right after college.
So what was the family dynamic like?
My mom and dad and my sister and I were the four of us. My dad obviously never had boys, so he made the best of what he had. So I became a sports fan. So my mom's a, you know, career teacher. We come from 5 generations of teachers. So doing well in school was a mandatory activity at our house. And then my sister, who's a complete opposite of me, is now living in Tasmania, literally in Tasmania. We're complete opposites, but somehow got raised by the same 2 parents.
How did she wind up in Tasmania?
She married an Australian who she met in Memphis. Then they lived here for a while and then moved to Australia. Then they moved. They were on the coast and they were in the outback. Now they're in Tasmania.
Do you mind if I ask what she did, what she and her husband do in Tasmania?
Crazy stuff. Well, she's a teacher. She teaches all kinds of stuff. But when she was in, she's an art teacher by trade. That's what she went to school for. But she, when she was in the Outback, was teaching in an Aboriginal school and was one of the only white people allowed on the land there as the teacher. And she would FaceTime us because the hour difference is interesting. It's about 12 hours most often. So like she would be going to sleep as I'm waking up, or I'd be going to sleep as she's waking up. So she'd FaceTime us from the class. And these kids just, it's amazing. They have so little. Kids are coming to school in no shoes, and she's teaching them art and all kinds of stuff. So
how much of an age difference between you and your
3.5 years between us, but it might as well be 40 because complete opposites.
So what types of things were you interested when you were going to school and when you were growing up, did you do for fun?
I was always like a resume patter. You know what I mean? I'm joining all the clubs. I was in band. I love playing. I played the piano growing up and then the flute. I still play the flute. And so that was my big thing. And then in college, I worked a lot. I worked, you know, on campus, like I said, at our sports information department. And I just was all about preparing me for real life. That's, you know, there are those kids you call old souls. I think that's who I was as a kid.
Where do you think you got that from? Do you think you got that from your mom?
I think so. I mean, she's, you know, she went and got her doctorate while she had two kids in school. I remember her studying, you know, sitting on the floor of our living room with her papers thrown out. And, you know, we had to get a computer back when those were crazy. You know, oh my gosh, we're getting a computer, because she had to write her dissertation, you know. So she was really driven. And I think that's probably where it all came from.
What did your dad do?
Sold insurance for a while and then became Mr. Mom. He was our stay-at-home dad for a long time because my mom, you know, was in school and was working at the Board of Education. And so her hours were longer, and he started working out of the house and took care of us and made her lunches and all that good stuff.
And you're sort of continuing the teaching tradition by teaching a class at UC?
Yes. It's media issues and ethics. And as you might surmise, there's a lot of opportunity for discussion about stuff that's going on in the news these
days.
Now,
how does that work? They approach you, or did you approach them with a curriculum?
Well, a friend of mine couldn't do it. She was asked to teach it and she couldn't. So she's in TV here locally. And so she called me and she's like, I think you'd be good at this. So I met with them and I'm like, this sounds great. Hagit Lamour, who was a former investigative reporter at Channel 9 and Channel 19, she taught this class and she's a full-time professor over there now. And so, I stole her lesson plans. And then this, you know, field is something that you can't just keep using the same stuff over and over. I mean, every week, I even have a segment that we do every week that I call In the News, every class, because there's always something in the headlines about what, you know, Facebook lying about the number of video views, or whether the president uses, you know, kind of bypasses media and uses Twitter to talk directly to people and how that affects newsrooms. And there's all kinds of discussions to be had. And so a lot of it is current event based.
How many people are in your class?
This, usually at 20 to 30,
and
at 25 this
time. Get a sense of what they want to do.
Yeah, and it's interesting. What I have seen, and I've done this for almost 4 years, and what I have noticed is my first couple of classes always ask, like, who has watched any local news in the last week? And this is in the e-media department at UC. So these are kids who are at least interested in media of some form. Not all of them want to go into news. Some of them want to do, like, you know, audio, or being an audio technician, or maybe go into music in some form or fashion, either recording or, you know, production or those sorts of things, photography, videography. So I say, how many of you have seen local news in the last week? And the first couple of semesters would be about half the class, a little bit more. These last couple of semesters, as these years have gone on, it's dwindling. It's two or three kids now. And it's interesting what they want. They're very skeptical, and that sounds bad, but it's good. They know just because they see something online, Twitter or Facebook or whatever it might be, it doesn't mean that it's real. And they always double and triple check, which is interesting because there are many people out there who are like, oh, saw this on Facebook, it's real. You know, just like keep sharing it over, which is how we got into this whole fake news mess in the beginning. So they're a very cynical, skeptical lot, but in a healthy way. They have a healthy skepticism about what they're reading. But their consumption of news is totally different than yours and mine, more than likely. And the best example I have of that is the shooting that happened downtown. I asked them in class that next time, I'm like, okay, we're going to talk about how this was covered. So I asked how they consumed that news. None of them, not one of them, turned on a television. Not one. And that's the first thing I did. Like, it's the way my brain works.
Right,
I turn on
too.
A TV.
Yeah.
And then I wanted a clearinghouse of information online. Like, I wanted to open my phone up and go somewhere and find where the best information was, all of it together. And what they were saying is, well, you know, my mom texted me or I saw it on Twitter or whatever. And then I would just look at it a little bit. And then all of them wanted to get away from it and then come back later when all the news was out there. You know, once they knew that the shooter was not running around downtown Cincinnati,
right,
they wanted to take time off from it so that all the news could be confirmed. Then we come back in the afternoon, read it, whatever. And then you know exactly what went on. But yeah, that thought process, which is to me, turn on a TV to see it, that's not there for them.
It feels also as a viewer that much of the marketing of local television news is rooted in fear as well. We're keeping you safe.
Yes.
That you need to watch us in order to be safe, whether it's our weather guys trying to keep you safe. Our news anchors are conducting an investigation that's going to keep you safe. It's going to protect you from whatever that danger is. Do you think
save you money?
Right. Mm-hmm. At what point do people either become desensitized to it or do they sort of backlash against it?
Well, the marketing people will tell you the second they get sick of it is the second they understand it and they're taking it in and believe it. But I like to use what I call the sports page theory. And that's this. Back in the day when there were these things called newspapers and we would have them in the newsroom. And you'd get like 20 of them, you know, so you could look through the newspaper. This is before everybody had, you know, all of their stuff online. If you ask somebody in the newsroom, hey, what's the first section of the paper you look at? They'd say, oh, the front page. I look at the business section. But the one page that you couldn't find was the sports page because somebody would steal it. It'd end up in the men's bathroom. Let's be fair. But they don't want to admit that's the first thing they read.
Yeah.
But it's the first thing they read.
Right.
So what that means in this world of advertising and all of that is if you ask somebody what's important, they're going to tell you breaking news, weather and traffic because it is. It's the most important thing. But that doesn't mean you need it exclusively. And it doesn't mean you need 9 minutes of discussions of barometric pressure. And it doesn't mean that I want everything terrible that has happened in the city of Cincinnati in the last 24 hours to lead the news. I just want to know it when it's important to me. And I think that's that context that we're losing. Is that, yes, people say it's breaking news and they say it's weather and they say it's traffic and all of that's important. I need to get to school on time. I need to get to work on time. We all understand that. But it's the quantity and the number of times we see those promos that I think it's really starting to desensitize.
Breaking news fascinates me because I'm old enough to remember when the term breaking news was first used. I recall it being the first Gulf War and CNN used that breaking news.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And we saw how successful it was for that network and other networks started using it and local television started using it. And now everybody opens with, we begin tonight with breaking news.
Mm-hmm. But what is the definition of breaking news? You know, I mean, is it?
Because when there really is breaking news,
right?
How do you get people's attention?
The boy that cried wolf, right? And I remember there was a time when newsrooms would like schedule in their rundown. So the rundown is like the list of stuff that they're going to cover that day. They would schedule breaking news. Now, if it's truly breaking news, how do you know it's going to happen? And
right. How
do you know it's going to take 45 seconds for me to tell you about it? Like we got to really be careful about it. There was a time when some newsrooms would say, okay, breaking news is any news that happened between the last newscast and now. No. And then is breaking news something that's currently happening? When does it become developing news? All of these titles we give these things. I always wonder, does it matter? Does it matter to somebody at home what we call it if it's truly important or if it's not? Is naming it something awesome going to make it a bigger, better story?
I think it gives it a sense of immediacy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're getting the latest
right
now.
But isn't that what news is? Shouldn't that be what news is? All news, not just breaking?
You really do sound like a consultant. I'm just telling you.
Maybe that's where I'm going next. Who knows?
And you're still very busy. So between the teaching job at UC, I also see you on Cincinnati.com.
Yes.
Is it a videocast?
It's Facebook Live. I do Facebook Live there every morning for the Inquirer. It's 10 a.m. Monday through Thursday, and it's called Coffee Break with Catherine. And it's just, you know, stuff that people, it's not going to be your breaking news and all that stuff, but it's going to be things that, you know, are important to families, important to people who might be at home at 10 a.m. and just kind of a discussion. And so I talk about stuff, people comment, we go live on location. I say, it's just me. That's the best part is that they're very open to whatever. They're like, do what you want. Just do what you think people might want to be talking about. And I by no means am considering this a clearinghouse of news. This is not going to, you know, get you set for the day with every single thing you need to know. But it's going to be stuff that you may want to talk about with your family, with your coworkers, or elsewhere.
I think a lot of your viewers want to know whether or not you're going to stay. You know, is it possible for a station in your hometown of Memphis or elsewhere to woo you and say, hey, we heard you're available. We'd love to have you come to Anytown USA.
I love Memphis, but I'm not moving. I'm stuck here in a good way. I'm married a local. My kids are from here. I love this city and all that it has to offer. It's got the best of everything in a little kind of manageable package.
And
I like it very much.
You've been involved in a lot of charitable efforts as well. I know you served on the board for the Family Nurturing Center.
Yeah, right? And you helped us out with that a couple of years ago. Yeah, and you know, I emcee a lot of things and I like doing that. I like giving back, and I grew up, my dad was a serial volunteer. I mean, I just grew up, you know, going to MS fun runs and, you know, caroling at old folks' homes and at Christmas. That's just what we did. And so I've carried that forth, and it's important to me to give back. And this is a city that's easy to give back to because there's a million great organizations and there's so many great things happening here.
Do you know what you want to be when you grow up?
It will be involved telling stories of some sort. Yeah. And right now I'm calling myself a freelancer because I'm doing a bunch of little things that I really enjoy. And, you know, it really took a while for me to get out of that mindset that I am a news anchor. I get up at 1:40, I get to work and I come home. Like it took a while to get out of that. And it took me a while to even think, what is it that I liked about that job? What is it that I didn't like? Here's a spoiler. It's the 1:40 a.m. wake up call. But you know, it just took me a while to figure out, you know, where this is going. I don't know that I have it figured out. Still working on that.
How old are your kids now?
12 and 14.
And how do they feel about mom being around in the morning?
All they said was, does this mean we still get freebies? I'm like, no, come on. No, they do actually like me. They like me being there because I get them up more often than not for school and such. And I've never done that. I mean, and I've never done that. But what I tell them is, what I said to my husband, and believe me, this was a shock. This was not like day one. I'm like, hey, here's the positives. No, it took a while. But I said, what if I'm just a really patient, nice person? And we just have never known that because every moment that I've ever had kids, I've been waking up in the middle of the night and getting 4 hours of sleep total. Like, what if I'm really super nice? And
that's
he's
hilarious.
Like, wouldn't that be great? So I'm finding that I'm a little more patient. So that's really good.
Yeah. Catherine, it was great having you.
Thank you
so much for coming on Person of Interest, and
thank
continued
you.
Success to you. And you got to come back.
Okay.
We want
done.
To know what the next chapter is.
All right. I do too.
Good seeing you.
You too.
All right. Person of Interest is produced by Natalie Jones. So if you found Catherine as fascinating as we did, send us an email to POI, which stands for Person of Interest, POI@WKRQ.com. We always welcome your thoughts. Also, feel free to make a suggestion for a future Person of Interest. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Until next time, for Person of Interest, I'm Jeff Thomas. Thanks for listening.
These are the people behind the stories that matter to you. Thanks for listening to QNO2's Person of Interest with Jeff Thomas.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.